Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now the latest news with Richard Hake. And we'll also bring in WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, who's been covering the derailment, and a few other guests as we go along. So, Richard, what's the latest this morning? Why don't you start us off?
Well, the latest is these two data recorders that were taken from the train. One was taken yesterday, another, I believe, earlier this morning. One was taken from the locomotive that was pushing the train, so that was in the back. And then there's other box in the front of the train. Hopefully, according to the National Transportation Safety Board, that'll give the latest on the information on the speed of the train, how the brakes were applied, as well as the throttle setting. They're actually downloading some of the information on one of those boxes here in the New York area. One of the other boxes was already sent to Washington for data analysis there.
All right. And let's also bring in Andrea Bernstein from our transportation desk, TransportationNation.org, and our Metro editor. Hi, Andrea.
Good morning.
And, you know, of course, I'll say it again before we get too into the weeds of recovery or analyzing what happened. Our hearts go out today to the families of those four people who died in the crash and to anyone who survived but is now injured as a result. So take that from me as representing everybody here at WNYC. And listeners, if there is anything you want to say or to ask about the deadly derailment, you can call in 212-433-WNYC. Any railroad professionals listening, we would be grateful for any light that you can shed, or anyone who is on that train or who rides that route, or anyone else with something to say or ask. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Andrea, what angles are you focusing on mostly at Transportation Nation?
Well, I think we're trying to figure out what happened, as is everyone's. You know, what went wrong. I mean, there are certain physical things we know about this curve, that it was a place where the trains were supposed to slow down. But as the governor's repeatedly been cautioning, trains have been rounding this curve every day, many times a day, with no incidents. So one of the things that I think we want to understand is what happened. The operator of the train, fortunately, is still alive, so I'm sure that that operator will be interviewed shortly.
I can actually add to that, because the National Transportation Safety Board this morning said that they expect to interview the engineer as well as the conductor either today or sometime tomorrow. We have to remember that he was injured as well and is in the hospital right now.
Right. And you mentioned the curve, which it is some curve there as the train turns 90 degrees from heading south along the Hudson to head east across the top of Manhattan or the very bottom of Riverdale there, Marble Hill, over the Harlem River, over to the Harlem River to turn south again and head to Grand Central on the east side. But Governor Cuomo seemed to put that to rest yesterday in a comment saying it has nothing to do with the curve.
Those are the three options that are on the table, Matt. Problem with the track, equipment problem, or operator error. I'm not an expert in this field. Working with the experts over the past day, I think it is going to be speed related. This was a tricky turn on the system, but it's a turn that's been here for decades, and trains negotiate all day long. So it's not about the turn. I think it's going to turn out to be about the speed more than anything, and the operator's operation of the train at that time.
So, Richard Hake, the governor, quite willing to speculate there.
It certainly is speculation. We also know that this section of track, this is where the trains go from about 70 miles an hour down to 30 miles per hour to make that sharp turn along the shoreline that you were discussing, Brian, right where the Hudson and the Harlem Rivers meet there along the shore. And there was also reports that the engineer did say when he was rescued, this is other reporting was done on this, that the brakes did not work. That's what he mentioned as they were removing him from the train. But again, the National Transportation Safety Board investigators there will do a formal interview with the engineer either today or tomorrow.
Yeah, and on other days, it is such a picturesque curve. I mentioned earlier that I live near there and I love going into Inwood Hill Park and seeing the view with the Henry Hudson Bridge going across the water there between Manhattan and the Bronx on the Henry Hudson Parkway. And that curvy track when the Metro North trains come around, it's especially beautiful in the winter when there's snow on the ground to see the trains in that winter wonderland. But yesterday, of course, it turned tragic as we could see the front derailed car almost in the water under the bridge. We could see it from the park, and lots of people went down to do just that. But, Andrea, this Metro North train was on the southbound track. There was that recent freight train problem close to that spot, but headed up the northbound track. Morning Edition had a guest today saying there's an indication the two are not related, just the fact that they were on different tracks. But he also said the flooding from Sandy, which did cover that stretch of tracks last year, might possibly have degraded or shifted the roadbed, contributing to both those accidents.
Well, that is one of the things that we're going to be looking at. I mean, if you look at WNYC's flood map, you can see that that area was inundated. But I think it's really important to remember, I mean, as you just said, the train cars are still there. The NTSB is slowly writing them and looking at it. There's going to be an awful lot that has to happen to secure the scene and make sure that all the investigative details are preserved before we can find out all of this. This also, of course, happened on a Sunday. I mean, I think one of the things that's important to remember, I mean, this was obviously a tragic and spectacular crash, but these things are very rare. I mean, if you're a passenger on a train, it's very unlikely that you're going to die. In fact, I was just looking at some databases this morning, and passenger fatalities, not involving highway crossings, which is a separate thing, but when you're on a train, you're much less likely to die than, say, if you are driving a car. I mean, something like 25, 30,000 people die every year in a car fatality. Some years, no people die on a train. Many fewer people are on trains, but it is not.
But still, even on a percentage basis, it's way safer to be on a train or an airplane. We've talked about this on the show many times, that our perception is driven by the spectacular or by the things that we don't have control over or feel we have no control over. So people are going to see something like this, and they're going to be too afraid of trains, some of them, and they're going to be not afraid enough of cars, because all of those individual car crashes are small events from a spectacular standpoint, and they don't make the news. But, oh, my goodness, look at the statistics. So let's bring in two other guests. George Bible is a mechanical engineering professor at the University of North Dakota and the author of Train Wreck, The Forensics of Rail Disasters. George Bible, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you.
And Ted Mann is joining us, too, transportation reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Greater New York section. Hi, Ted. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you.
So, George Bible, as the expert who wrote the book Train Wreck, The Forensics of Rail Disasters, do you think you're seeing anything here from what you can tell from afar that people aren't talking about yet in the news coverage?
Well, the most common cause of derailments are equipment failures. There's been reports that they were going too fast or the brakes didn't work, and that's always a possibility, but usually derailments are caused by broken track or broken wheels or something like that. That is, in fact, more common.
Anything else?
Yes, I'd like to reinforce just how much safer trains are. They've always been safer than the competition. People have forgotten how unsafe and how many deaths occurred from horse accidents. And I think the numbers are something like 20 times safer, including the 2008 Los Angeles accident that killed 25 people when the driver was busy texting. If you exclude that accident, train travel is something like 45 times safer than traveling by car.
Indeed. Now, Ted Mann, I see that you reported for the Journal back a few months ago on a push taking place in Washington with the rail networks fighting a federal requirement to install what are known as anti-crash systems by the end of 2015. The rail anti-crash technology, you wrote, positive train control, or PTC, is designed to automatically stop a train even before it runs a red signal or gets into other dangerous situations. Do you think that could have been applicable here? Have you looked into that?
Well, you know, it's important to note that the investigation is still ongoing, but if the indications that we're getting from people who are familiar with the investigation are right, this sounds like an accident that is exactly what PTC is designed to prevent. We spoke to two people yesterday who are sort of familiar with the investigation of this accident who are saying that, contrary to what the reports that Richard mentioned, that there isn't an indication that the guy applied the conventional brakes to slow down as you normally would entering the curve. So if they are right, and if that's what the investigation finds, this would be a situation where you would have a network of computers with sensors on the trains that could see a problem that was going to happen and bring the train to a halt before he can get into that curve going too fast.
Professor Bible, are you familiar with this notion of positive train control, or PTC, these computerized systems?
Yes, I am, and is most definitely designed to prevent human error if, in fact, it was a human error, but if it was a mechanical failure such as a broken rail or a broken wheel, it would not prevent that type of accident. And also there's other technology that's actually been around on the Northeast Corridor for decades. It's called automatic train control. It's somewhat similar that would prevent over-speeding on curves. That's been limited technology. One of the problems they're still having today is you can't get an algorithm that safely stops a heavy freight train the same as a light passenger train. If you stop the freight train too abruptly, you can easily derail it. And they're still struggling with that.
Interesting. And so, Ted, on the politics of it, again, you reported that the rail networks were fighting, as of June when you wrote the article, a federal requirement to install these anti-crash systems. What's the status of that politically, do you know?
Well, right now, the Federal Railroad Administration, which is the regulator that oversees all of these railroads that are required to install PTC by the end of 2015, the regulator itself has said in a report to Congress that many of those railroads are not going to make that deadline. That includes Metro North, includes Long Island Railroad, includes Metra, the Chicago system. So right there, you have the three biggest in the country. The issues are, you know, both technological. The railroads are saying we haven't really fully tested these systems. We don't have the radio spectrum we need to get them to work in some cases. They're also totally fiscal. I mean, the Metro North says we have cab signaling in our trains. On an ordinary day, we can run as safely as we would under PTC, and we got a lot of other things we need to build with our capital dollars that are fairly scarce other than putting in this brand new system. The question now, if this investigation winds up finding this is human error, is whether politically it gets harder for them to say that and whether they are going to have to, you know, adjust what they've said about their ability to install PTC.
Yes.
But right now, the answer from the railroad has been that they literally cannot possibly make this deadline of 2015 and that they're hoping to do it by 2018 instead.
And so I think this deadly accident has shined a light on this political battle between how much safety technology the railroads have to install and how they've been lobbying against it in Washington. We have Ted Mann with us, transportation reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Greater New York section, who is just speaking. We have George Bible, author of the book Trainwreck, The Forensics of Rail Disasters, WNYC Metro editor and Transportation Nation editor, Andrea Bernstein, and Richard Hake. And let's take a phone call. Tom in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Right. One thing that no one has mentioned, that pushing the train from behind compared to pulling it from the front potentially is much more unstable in dynamic situations, because if the front of the cars were braking a little bit more than the ones behind, the force of the braking from behind would cause the cars to fold when they're being pushed, whereas if it was being pulled from the front, that's much less likely to happen. I think they should...
And, of course, they did fold in the way that you describe. But, Professor Bible, maybe you have some insight into this. And for people who don't know, this is a train on the Hudson Line that has a diesel engine. And heading northbound, the engine is in the front, and they don't turn the train around. So heading southbound, the engine is in the back, pushing the train. Is it more risky to be doing it that way, Professor Bible? Is this news to you?
Well, that is a common arrangement for commuter trains. They have a cab car in the front with the controls, so the driver can see look ahead. But as the train begins to fold, emergency brakes are automatically applied. And this has been studied, and the biggest concern is that cab cars are typically also occupied by passengers. So if you're in a collision situation, you want the passengers one car back away from the point of contact. That's more of a concern than derailment. But the caller is right. That is a factor. But I don't believe the FRA has decided that's a major factor in previous studies.
Interesting. Al in Croton, which is along that line. Hi, Al. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I heard some TV reporters yesterday discussing, and I think they were under a misconception. They said the engineer in a train which is being pushed by the locomotive, that the engineer stays in the locomotive. Well, I think that's a misconception, because every time I've seen these trains being pushed, there's always a motorman in the front car, which I think supports what your guest just said a moment ago. The car has a cab with special controls, which the motorman can relay back to the locomotive.
Right. Al, thank you for that. So is that your understanding? Did Al get you right, Professor Bible? The train operator, even though the engine was in the back, is in the front driving the train and being able to look out the window?
That's always the case. For example, you can imagine a school bus being stalled on the tracks. It'd be totally unsafe to have the operator in the back. And it's not done.
Santiago in the Bronx, a former subway train operator. Santiago, thank you for weighing in.
Yes. New York's the subway system has a pneumatic system where each signal has a hammer associated, adjacent to the signal, which rises when the signal is red. And there's a device on the bottom of the in the front of the truck is the assembly where all the wheels and suspensions and everything is located. And in front of that truck, there's a little device that sits low. And in the event that the train runs a red light and the hammer associated with that light is sticking up, the hammer strikes the device and the device opens the pneumatic line train-wise. And the train immediately goes into emergency brakes.
I see. So there is that kind of mechanical fail-safe on the subway for some kinds of related situations. That's interesting.
Well, we should point out that there is something similar on Metro North trains. It's not as robust as the subway, but you do have cab signaling. So if a driver is going to blows through a red light on a Metro North line where the cab signaling is enabled, you would get a similar power cutout. But again, we don't know what the investigators will find. But it doesn't seem that this is a situation where anyone ran a red light. And so that's a safeguard that wouldn't actually have helped here, because it essentially we need something that is more directly monitoring speed if you want it to automatically be correctable.
And, Andrea, you wanted to add something pertinent to the previous caller?
Well, just to the point of these automated safety systems and the rail systems opposing them, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that the context of this has been years and years and years of a Congress that doesn't really want to fund rail systems. So they've been getting a message, in particular from Ray LaHood, the former transportation secretary, safety is the number one priority. But they're trying to figure out how to fund these things. And, of course, nobody really wants to pay for things like train tracks. That seems very annoying, or train equipment or increased safety equipment. But it's been a horrible year for Metro North. And if you sort of put in 2 years from Hurricane Irene, you've had all the passengers having to take the buses around the Port Jervis line, then the New Haven line, and now this. It's the kind of thing that I think people should be expecting more of in this kind of funding environment that we're in.
So, Ted Mann, transportation reporter for The Wall Street Journal, have you been hearing this, that this is just another in a long line of Metro North incidents over the last few years, and that this part of the MTA actually has a unique safety problem?
Well, they've certainly had a horrible year, as Andrea said, and I totally agree with what she said about them, their opposition to the mandate. It's not their, you know, not wanting to have the most robust safety system possible. It's having all of these other issues that they also have to deal with. If you look at the crash in May in near Bridgeport, that's sort of, I think, probably a pretty good example. We now can come close to concluding that was really about maintenance of the track. The track joint broke and a train derailed after it rolled over it. That's a safety problem that a robust PTC system would not be able to fix. And that's also an area where you've got to spend a lot of money keeping the system in good enough shape so that it doesn't happen. So that's certainly in the past year, Metro North has been dealing with a number of these breakdowns that suggest that there is a lot of work that had to be done to keep everything running as smoothly as it had been just a year or two earlier.
George Bible, does Metro North have any kind of reputation among train experts like yourself as being poorly maintained or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of. In fact, I believe this is the first fatal accident in New York City in 50 years, unlike Washington Metro, which is a bit snake bit, and they've had quite a few in the last 20 years, three or four, I believe.
Jonathan on Wall Street. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, good morning, Brian. I take this same line every single day. I have consistently for the past 9 years. I get on at Riverdale, which is the stop just before this, where this tragic accident occurred. I'd like to ask George Bible about a theory that I have, because as someone who takes this line regularly, I know that in the autumn months, the issue of leaves tend to be a big problem. There is, in fact, on the Metro North, on the MTA website, there is a press release back from 2007 that suggests that leaves caught in wheel wells can create something called a slip and slide condition, because they get in there, it gets slimy, and it gets slippery. I'm just curious to know whether or not anything I'm saying right now is consistent with a slip and slide and may have contributed to the motorman's inability to stop the train.
Well, I spent a lot of time studying the NTSB database on train wrecks and FRA's database, and I've never seen a train wreck caused by that. Coincidentally, I did look at that website this morning, and they were expressing a concern about slipping wheels wearing flat spots, and that's a bit of a problem that can cause an uncomfortable ride. Imagine a flat spot on a bowling ball every rotation going kerplunk, kerplunk. And that could ultimately damage the track, but I've never heard of a derailment because of slipping on wet leaves.
Jonathan, thank you. And Frank, on our comments page, Dr. Bible asks, how would seatbelts help save lives in a train wreck like this? Is this ever a topic of conversation in the industry, whether, as we do in cars, as increasingly students, children do on school buses, that people on trains other than the subway, where I don't know how you could do it, but on commuter trains like this, each seat should be equipped with a seatbelt?
Well, the biggest concern for train crashes is loss of livable volume. The passengers are crushed, so it wouldn't solve that problem. In this case, people fell out the windows. It would have prevented that. That seatbelts aren't very popular, and windows, you got to realize, are designed to open easily to avoid trapping people because of fire. So it's hard to balance those two, make them easily accessible when you need them, and prevent what happened yesterday. And so seatbelts would solve the problem, but I don't think people really want to wear them either.
There is also that. Richard Hake, just to wrap it up, what's going to happen the rest of the day? Any indication when they're going to be able to read anything in those black boxes to confirm the engineer's claims of brake failure or anything else?
Well, we are expecting a briefing from the National Transportation Safety Board later on this afternoon, so maybe they'll give us more information. They're also going to perform the autopsies today on the four victims who died in this crash. That's today as well. And again, the National Transportation Safety Board expected to interview the conductor and the engineer either today or tomorrow.
Richard Hake, Andrea Bernstein, George Bible, and Ted Mann, thank you all for this coverage today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we turn to Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek, who's been watching a lot of mom-and-pop investors finally get over their shyness since the financial crisis began and getting in as interest rates still hover near zero and as stocks soar. But is it a good idea? Stay with us.